welcome Jeff with a warm applause on stage. He works for Tactical Tech. And we'll talk about bias in data and racial profiling in Germany compared with the UK. It's your stage.
All right, thank you. Okay, so my presentation is called Profiling Injustice, Disaggregating Data by Race and Ethnicity to Monitor and Evaluate Discriminatory Policing. In terms of my background, I've done research, doing mostly quantitative research around the issues of racial discrimination for a long time. In New York, at the Center for Constitutional Rights, I was working on looking at trends and levels of use of force by police against civilians, and also on stop and search against civilians. And then more recently, for the last 18 months or so, I've been working as a research consultant with Tactical Tech, looking at issues of data politics and privacy. So this is kind of like a merger of these two areas. In terms of what this presentation is going to be about, there's going to be three takeaways. First, that we're dealing with the issues of privacy and also discrimination, and both are fundamental human rights. But there's tension between the two. And important questions to think about are, when does privacy concerns exceed or take precedence over those of discrimination, or vice versa? Two, that data is political, both in the collection and aggregation of data, but also in terms of how the categories are being created. And then three, that data ethics are a complex thing, that things aren't so black and white all of the time. So what is racial profiling? The term originates from the US and refers to when a police officer suspects, stops, questions, arrests, or other stages of the criminal justice system because of their perceived race or ethnicity. After 9/11, it also refers to the profiling of Muslims or people perceived to be Middle Eastern. And in German, there is no direct translation, so the term racial profiling, quotes, is used a lot in parliamentary hearings and also in court documents. So the problem that we're going to talk about is that because of the lack of data in Germany, there's no empirical evidence to monitor and evaluate trends in discrimination. This is creating problems for both civil society in terms of looking at these levels and trends over time, but also from an individual perspective, it becomes difficult for people to file complaints. In Germany, the only way to file a complaint officially is to go to the police department, which introduces power dynamics, challenges and additional barriers. But also, if you're an individual, you have to show that there's a trend, right? That you are part of another, a long-standing story. And without this data, it becomes difficult to prove that that's happening. So what we need, or what some people are calling for, is having this data at a state and also at a national level. And this ratio that I'm putting here, referring to policing, is looking at the rate at which people are stopped over this census figure of the demographic share of the population. And you really need both, the first being on the police side and the second being on the census, so that, you know, if you only have one, if you only have the rate at which police are stopping people, then you actually can't see if this is discriminatory or not. And if you only have the census, then you can't see that either. So you really need both. The European Commission, International Labor Organization, and academics are all calling for the creation of standardized and comparable data sets. And I'm not going to read these out, but I can go back to them later if you're interested. But what I'm going to talk about is comparing the UK to that of Germany. So in Germany, in 1983, there was a census, or there was an attempt to make it a census. But due to widespread resentment and disenfranchisement, fears of surveillance and lack of trust in state data collection, there was a big boycott, right? Or people deliberately filled in forms wrong. In some cases, there was even bombings of statistical offices, or people spilled coffee over census forms to try to deliberately ruin them. Right, as a couple of other presentations at the conference have already said, this was found to be an unconstitutional census because of the way that they were framing it, comparing these the census to household registrations. And you know, the census was delayed until 1987, which was the most recent census until the most recent European one in 2011. This Supreme Court decision was really important because it established this right for informational self-determination, very important for privacy in terms of Germany, you know, until today. So what kinds of information is being collected? In Germany, we have pretty standard kind of demographic information, things like gender, age, income, religion. But what I want to talk about in particular is country of origin and country of citizenship, which are used to determine a person of a migration background. And this term, person of migration background, generally refers to whether you, your parents, or your grandparents, so first, second, or third generation, come from a migrant background. Right? And this term is used oftentimes as a proxy for ethnic or for racial diversity in Germany. And this is problematic because you're using citizenship as a proxy for looking at racial and ethnic identity. And it also ignores the experiences and identities, the self-identities, of people who don't fall into this first, second, or third generation, right? People who may identify as Black German, let's say, but are fourth, fifth, or sixth generation. They're just ignored in this data set, so they fall out. Also, it's difficult to measure these at a national level because each state has different definitions of what constitutes a migrant background. So we don't have these at a national level, but also within states, there's no way to compare them. Of course, not having that data doesn't mean that there's no racism, right? And so in 2005, for instance, we see that neo-Nazi incidents have increased 25%. The NSU case coming out, but still going on in court proceedings. You know, the xenophobic attacks, but also the way in which these crimes were investigated at a state and at a federal level, and the way that it was botched, in addition to showing, you know, that you know, racism now in general is at a higher rate than it has been for the last 30 years, and much more recently seeing the rise in arson attacks on refugee centers. There's been over 200 attacks this year so far. You know, all of these show that not collecting this data doesn't mean that we don't have a problem. Right, so the UK, by comparison, in 1981, there was the Brixton riots in an area of London. And these arose largely because of resentment towards the way that police were carrying out what they called sus laws, or people being able to be stopped on suspicion of committing a crime, carrying drugs, having a weapon, or so on and so forth. And so in the aftermath of the riot, they came up with this report called the Scarman Report. And this found that there was much disproportionality in the way that police were carrying out their stop and search procedures. So for the first time, this required, or one of the reforms that was instituted, was that UK police started to have to collect data on race or ethnicity during the stops, right? During when they stop a person, they have to start collecting this data. And then you have a baseline that's being established. Around the same time in the UK, right, we have the 1981 census. And in society, they were having a lot of debates around whether or not they wanted to have this collecting this baseline national level figure, right? Because we needed these two things for this ratio in order to monitor and evaluate levels of discrimination. But you know, there was a lot of opposition to this, and many found it to be, quote, morally and politically objectionable. But not for the reasons we'd think, right? People found objections to it not because of asking this question, but because of the way that the question was phrased or the categories that were being used. And they did surveys between 75 and about 95 and found that among marginalized communities and minority ethnicity groups, there was actually a lot of support for collecting this kind of data. They just wanted to have it phrased to be different. And so in 91, they started to collect the data. They put this race question in. And here I have in 2011, the most recent census, some of the kinds of categories that they wanted to also include. And they've changed over time. So for instance, like white Irish people felt that they also were discriminated against. And they experienced things differently than white British people, for instance. So having things broken down further would be helpful for them in terms of highlighting discrimination that each specific demographic faces. So around that time, 91, right, 93, we have the murder of Stephen Lawrence in an unprovoked racist attack. Nobody is ever convicted of that, but what's important is that we have this McPherson report that came out. And it developed a lot of recommendations, 70, and most of them were adopted. One, to be collecting this at a national level and to be comparing these. In 2011, they stopped mandating that you had to collect this data at a national level, so none of the data from then going forward can actually be trusted. Some forces continue to do it, but not all of them, so you can't actually compare them between forces. The same year, we have these London riots. The Guardian and the NLSE put out a report called Reading the Riots, where they did a lot of interviews with people who participated, and they found that most of the people who participated had feelings of that they were mistreated by police, or that there was racial discrimination in terms of the policing practices, that they weren't being treated with respect. Right. So to put some data to that, before this was removed, there's two different types of stops in the UK. Right. There's pace stops, where you're stopped with reasonable suspicion. And among that, you have, for instance, black people stopped at 7 times the rate of white people. Asian people, Asian referring to predominantly Southeast Asian in the UK, at twice the rate. And Section 60 stops where you don't have to actually have reasonable suspicion, right? And when you don't need to have that, you have much, much higher rates, right? 26.6 times the rate of white people, black people are being stopped at. Right? But the State Department's even coming out and they're saying, well, there's no relationship between criminality and race, or criminality and ethnicity, right? In fact, like, if people are being stopped at these rates, it's in the wrong direction. You have white males in particular who are offending at higher rates, who are using drugs at a higher rate, who are possessing weapons at a higher rate, but that's not who's being stopped. There is a connection, though, between race and ethnicity and poverty. Right, so you can see here, they call it like BAME groups, or black, Asian, and minority ethnicity. And you can see that among like wealth and assets, it's much, much lower for non-white households. Unemployment rates are much higher as well. Income is much lower. And so I like making maps, and I think maps are really cool because you can tell stories when you overlay a lot of data with it. And so on the left, I put by different borough in London, where people are actually being stopped, right, per 1,000 people in 2012. And on the right, I put where the crime is actually occurring, right, and this is coming from UK police. And so you can see that where people are being stopped isn't exactly where the crime is actually happening. And if you're seeing this stop and search as a crime prevention tactic, then we have to question why this isn't lining up. Right, going back to this ratio, earlier I mentioned like, you know, having the rate at which one group is being stopped over that share of the total population, but we can take it a step further and we can compare that to between different demographic groups, right? And when using census figures combined with police figures, right, we can do things like looking on the left, I made this disproportionality ratio, so the rate at which black groups as a share stopped versus the total population compared to white groups, right, are stopped, and you can see the darker areas, right, is where you have a higher rate. So when we're talking about those 7 times or 26 times more likely, right, these are those areas that we're talking about. And so the darker areas, you can see that when compared to poverty, right, people are stopped. There's greater disproportionality ratios in wealthier areas than there are in poorer areas. Right, and this is kind of a way, you could say, almost of perceiving people of color as others who shouldn't belong in these areas. Right, it's also, when combined with other census information, you can see that you have more discrimination, you have more disparities in areas that are more white and also less racially diverse. Right, so this is kind of along the same kind of a message. But if it works, fine. It doesn't, right? UK police is saying that at most they have a 6% arrest rate of all stops, and arrests are not conviction rates. Looking for weapons, we have like, you know, less than 1% of a positive search rate. And the European Human Rights Commission, for instance, has called for reform of these practices. The UN has called for reform of these practices. And they instituted a reform that called for having a 20% arrest quota, right? And so that could either go positively or negatively, right? Making a higher quota means that you could be just arresting more people that you're stopping. More likely or hopefully, right? It means that you have a higher justification or grounds for stopping a person. Right, so these are the kinds of things you can do in the UK with these kinds of data. In Germany, you can't. But I want to highlight, there's this one case in Koblenz in 2010. There was a student, an unnamed and black student, who was stopped traveling on the train, and he was asked to show his ID. And he refused. And he said, no, I'm not going to do that. This is reminiscent of Nazi-era tactics, right? And so he was charged with slander, right? And he was brought into court, and the police officer, when it was in court, said, quote, I approach people that look like foreigners. This is based on skin color. Right? And so this is for the first time the police have admitted that their grounds for doing immigration-related stops are based on perceived race or ethnicity. Right? The judge sided with the police that this was good justification, that it was good grounds, but a higher court ruled that that wasn't the case. they said, yeah, this is unconstitutional. You can't actually do it. It violates the Constitution. no person shall be favored or disfavored because of sex, parentage, race, language, homeland, origin, faith, religious, and so on. Just as a side note, there's been a large movement to remove this term race from that part of the Constitution since it's been put in. And also, the courts dismissed the slander charge. They said, no, the student, like, he's actually able to critique the police, in this way. Right, but after, we have the response by the police union, the head of the police union at the time, who said, quote, the courts deal with the law in an aesthetically pleasing way, but they don't make sure their judgments match practical requirements, right? And so what this means is we see that according to the police union, right, this is an official response, but this is from the police union itself, right, they say that we need to profile, we need to do this, or else we aren't able to do immigration-related stops. That's crazy, right? They also, at the same time, when they're doing these parliamentary hearings, they institute these mandatory intercultural trainings for police officers. And these are kind of like a one-day training where you go and you learn all about how to deal with people from different cultures, right? But in some of the interviews that I was doing, they said, okay, well, this isn't an intercultural issue, right? This is a racism issue, right? People aren't just coming from other places. These are Germans. These are people who grew up here. These are people who live here, who know how to speak the language, who were born and raised. And we need to be dealing with this in a different way. However, right, in this time, right, we see that racial profiling has become part of the national conversation. Right, and so this is the sticker that somebody put up in Berlin on the U-Bahn. It says, attention, we practice racial profiling while checking validity of your ticket. It's not real, but it looks, I think it's kind of cool. Right, so when they were doing this in these Bundestag hearings, right, they released data for federal police for 2013. This is the first time that we have any data that's released. No data has ever been released based on state police stops. They say that they're not actually collecting the information, so they don't have any to show. Of course, the figures that are released from the federal police are not disaggregated by race or ethnicity. But what does this actually show? Okay, so most of the stops, right, over 85%, are border stops, right? Border being within about 30 kilometers of the German border. So this is actually taking into account most of the German population. But if we're doing these immigration-related stops, then if we break it down by offense, right, then the last two, these are the immigration-related offenses that people are committing, right? And we have less than, at most, maybe 1% of people who are found to be positive, right? Meaning that they're found to be violating some kind of offense. It's not a conviction rate, and people can challenge this. For instance, like, you don't have to have your ID on you at all times. You can present it later, and the charge could go away. Right, but if if we have such low rates of positive searches, then like why is this happening? Why do we feel that with such good data and knowing, you know, as good researchers, why are we continuing this as a practice? And one of the other interviews that I was doing, they found that, okay, well, you know, we know this is ineffective, right? But this has the effect of criminalizing our communities, right? And whether or not this is true is an argument for why we should maybe have this kind of data to show that this is or is not actually occurring. Of course, you know, European Commission Against Racism and Intolerance and the UN have said, well, you know, even among this at most 1% positive rates, these are not being distributed evenly. And you have people of certain groups that are being stopped at rates higher than others, particularly Black and other minority ethnicity groups. Okay, so going back, right, why, to the initial question, if we have both freedom from discrimination and the right to privacy as these human rights, how do we address this tension, right? And how do we ensure that we're making the right decision in terms of which takes precedence? And so I've thought of three different reasons why this isn't happening. The first being a series of legal challenges, right? Things that are preventing us from implementing this from a legal basis. And the first, there's three exceptions that would allow for this data to be collected. The first being if there's a provision in EU directive that calls for collecting this kind of a data. And within that, if you have the consent of the person, the data subject, let's say, right? Consent is kind of a difficult thing, and we could have a whole conversation just about that on its own. You know, if you're being stopped by a police officer, to what extent can you actually consent to the data that's being collected, right? But, you know, this is put in place as one of the mandatory legal requirements. Or if there's an exception in the hopefully soon to be finalized EU data protection law, that allows for collecting data if it's in the public interest. So you could argue that, you know, we need to be collecting this data because in monitoring and evaluating discrimination is a problem that we need to solve as a society, right? Right. Two, as a lot of people here at the conference are talking about, there's a lot of distrust in terms of collecting data by the state, particularly sensitive data, right? But I mean, as many of us are already aware, this data is already being collected, right? And this doesn't mean that we should maybe collect more just because, you know, just for the sake of collecting data. But in terms of sensitive data, we're collecting things also like medical data, right? And medical data sometimes is interesting for looking at trends in terms of illnesses and where illness spreads, right? And you can look at this as also possibly, a way of using sensitive data for highlighting and monitoring public problems. Right, and three, we have, these challenges determining which kind of categories we should put in place, right? But like the UK, if something were implemented in Germany, I feel as though this would change over time as other groups also want their data to be collected or not. So that's kind of where I'm at. I think that there are no easy answers in terms of whether we should or should not do this. But I think that at the very least, we should be starting to have these conversations. And I think that it's important to start having these conversations with communities themselves who are being targeted or feel that they're being profiled. So thank you.
It was an awesome talk. I think there might be 5 minutes for questions. There are mics over there and over there, and whoever has a question, like in the front rows, I can come walk to you.
Thank you very much. I'm just wondering in terms of how you're sort of creating this.
I can't hear you.
Of course. I'm sort of curious in terms of how you're creating the disproportionate demographics, whether it would be worth including other kinds of information such as sex, age, mm-hmm. time of day they're stopped, because there's possibly an employment bias as well.
I'm sorry, I still can't actually hear you.
Sorry. Whether it be worth including, say, other details about people, such mm-hmm. as their sex, their age, mm-hmm. maybe the time of day that these stops are happening, mm-hmm. as there may be a bias towards the unemployed. in your, if that's possible, you think, with the UK census data?
So you're asking, do I feel as though we should also be including other kinds of demographic data? I do, but I think that I shouldn't be the one who's deciding how to implement these programs, right? And I think that, we should be speaking with communities themselves and having them give their opinion. So if this is something that those communities who feel that they're being targeted or being discriminated against want to include, then I think that they should be taken into account. But, I don't know that I should be the one who's deciding that.
Okay, next question over there, please.
Coming back to the ratio. To this ratio you've been talking about. Mm-hmm. So you compare census data to, as you said in the definition in the first slide, perceived ethnicity or race. Mm-hmm. So it is an attribution of the persons themselves in the census compared to attribution by police officers. Mm-hmm. And those won't necessarily match, I'm not sure. So I was just wondering whether you could comment on that a bit. And this is related to the second question when it comes about, we don't get this data maybe from the police because it's difficult for the state to collect it, but maybe we could get the data from those which suffer from discrimination in the first place. So do you see any possibility for public platforms? So I was reminded of this idea from Egypt, HarassMap, which is about sexual harassment of women, that just made visible with maps similar to what you do actually, where this happens, when this happens, how this happens. But it's been the people themselves speaking out and making this heard. And I was wondering whether that maybe is another source of the data you would be needing for your work.
So the first question was talking about whether we should be using self-identified versus perceived, right? They may not line up, right? People can be perceived in a way different than they identify. Some groups in Germany are calling for both. Right, they're calling for kind of like a two-ticket mechanism, right, where you have people who put how they self-identify and also how the police are identifying them, right? If we're looking for patterns of discrimination, then it may actually be more interesting to be looking at how people are perceived, right, than how people self-identify. But I think it's important to take both into account. And for the second question, I'm sorry, I kind of forgot what that was.
Like asking the people themselves for data when they suffer from discrimination or being stopped more.
I think that's a great idea. And there was a survey that was actually just done that was doing just that. The findings haven't been released, but it just finished up. That's looking at different types of experiences of discrimination that people are having. There's also organizations like social worker organizations that have been collecting this data for a long time. Having hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of cases. Thanks.